There is nationwide consensus among those holding a stake in the diagnosis and treatment of chronic pain regarding the ethical issues that must be addressed. That's according to an article in the September 2011 issue of Pain Medicine. Two of the four authors of that article join us to talk about it in this edition of the Bioethics Channel. The Bioethics Channel is a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on the Center programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Meyer Christopher is president and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics and the holder of the Kathleen M. Foley Chair for Pain and Palliative Care at the Center. Summer McGee is Director of Graduate Studies at the Center and Associate Professor in Health Policy and Management at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Myra, this study, published in the 2011 issue of Pain Medicine, was based on stakeholder meetings held in five locations across the country. Tell us about those meetings.
All right. Beginning in the late summer of 2010, we held meetings in Seattle first, Tampa, Boston, Chicago, and San Diego. And the meetings were all about 25 people, 20 to 25 people, who represented healthcare providers working in this space, working around chronic pain in particular. It included academics as well as private practice physicians, primary care docs, specialists in the area of pain medicine, but importantly, it also included patients and or families in these discussions.
So you had these stakeholder meetings, and then you gathered all of the input, and you identified six common themes from this.
We did. Perhaps not surprisingly, there were very common points of discussion in each of the meetings. And I think fairly predictable. There were some things that we did not imagine that would happen, but the themes that emerged had to do with barriers to access to quality care, what actually is quality pain care, the need for medical education and more research, legal and regulatory barriers, public awareness, and then the use of opioid therapies in the treatment of chronic pain.
So, Summer McGee, as you looked at the results from these meetings and as you were working with Meyer and the two other authors in putting together this report, what was it that popped out at you, so to speak, in terms of what needed to be in an article like this?
Well, I think the most important thing that emerged from the data is that among all of these common themes, that there is an ethical component. And this was something that was not in the literature at this point, either an empirical study looking at what are the common themes across the treatment of chronic pain among all of these different stakeholders that Myra described, but also that within each one of them, whether it was access to care or whether it was how we handle the issue of regulating and using opioid therapies for the treatment of pain, that all of these stakeholder meetings had emerged from them the idea that however we handle them, we ought to do it in a moral way, and that there is an ethically appropriate solution or set of solutions for dealing with these issues.
And Laurel, the thing that I found really rich and informative in the discussions were that the ethical issues sort of permeate various levels in people's lives. So there was a lot of discussion about professional ethics, the duties and obligations, the responsibilities of healthcare professionals in general. There was also discussion about what I would clearly refer to as institutional ethics. Health systems that had done away with clinics because they simply were too costly and they had shifted towards other pain services where the data does not imply that the outcomes are as good, but there are greater revenues to be generated. And there was a lot of discussion about that. Also, a lot of discussion about tension between the professions, between professional associations, societies. But in general, what I believe strongly is that this is a societal ethics issue. Do we want to be the kind of society that turns our head to the suffering of those that have chronic pain? And in particular, when we know that we can, in most instances, manage these problems.
So, Summer, are we at a point where more of these individuals who are represented in these stakeholder meetings will consider ethical considerations as they move forward in the treatment of chronic pain?
I certainly hope so. I think that articles like this and others that we've been working on here at the center are really trying to help reframe these issues. And as Myra just mentioned, the need for a societal transformation around these kinds of issues is incredibly important. And one of the things that I think that the public, that policymakers, that researchers can all get behind is the idea that this is morally unacceptable in a country where we spend 17.6% of our GDP on healthcare, that there are so many people who don't receive either access to or quality care in this one specific area. And as Myra, I'm sure, will talk about, the IOM report really demonstrates how dramatic we have been failing in this area, and that we really need to take up this mantle and get behind this. As Myra said, in a society like ours, there's no excuse for people being in suffering and not receiving the care that they, quite frankly, deserve.
So, Summer, you mentioned the Institute of Medicine report on pain, and so that's a good lead into Myra here to talk about that Institute of Medicine report on pain, and then actually this article in Pain Medicine, that the process of that was starting before that report
yes.
was even considered or thought about.
Well, it had been considered. There had been talk about an IOM report on pain by many people for a long time. But at the point at which we began our project that's reported out in Pain Medicine, we did not know that IOM would convene a committee and that there would be a report forthcoming in fairly close proximity to the release of our data. And so when we did learn that, our excitement grew because, frankly, when you have data that comes from sort of the grassroots level, when the people day-to-day who are struggling with these issues give information that can be collected, coordinated, and synthesized, reported out, when you have that, and then we learned that we were going to have this committee at IOM, really kind of at the highest level, and the possibility that you could compare and contrast those reports and find areas of common agreement, of common concern, that kind of intersection is where you get real momentum around policy changes, whether within societies, professional societies, or at the state level or at the national level. And the amazing thing for us was that we did have an opportunity then. We were invited to participate with IOM. And so we were actually working at both levels simultaneously. And the really amazing thing about all of this to me, in sort of stepping back and looking at it, is that the reports are very parallel. There are very few disconnects. Actually, the report we did for Pain Medicine, the research we did, was broader. IOM had a bit narrower charge that from HHS, from the secretary. But there really is no incongruence in what was reported from the local stakeholder meetings held across the country and what the IOM committee members reported out.
Summer, you work in the realm of public policy, and now you have somewhat two basic tools, I would imagine, with the Institute of Medicine report, now this article in Pain Medicine. How does that work out in that arena within public policy being developed around chronic pain?
Well, I think that the first part is that in both a peer-reviewed published article like this and the IOM report is that it needs to be broken down one step further into actionable ideas that we can take to public policymakers and to other organizations and say, this is what the data show. This is what this very prestigious committee has found. There seems to be consensus around this, and now we are giving this moral charge to you. And to for all the stakeholders involved to explain to them, not just public policymakers, but the myriad or public policy organizations and advocacy groups that also have a stake in this, to say, we now see there is this emerging consensus. basis and using ethics language and the idea that this is a moral responsibility, not just of people who work in, but also those who are around and surrounded by pain, to take up this mantle and begin to work on this issue. So I think it's about making it more practical and simple and giving very concrete recommendations, much more concrete than even what we found in this study, to be able to allow policymakers at all levels, the state and federal, to be able to take them up and try to make change.
Myra, then, how does this study then, in your mind, advanced what the IOM came up with back in late June?
This may sound a bit presumptuous, but in fact, I think it's a validation of the IOM report, and that is not in any way to speak negatively about those who worked on the IOM committee, because it was an amazing group. But, you know, very often we will hear people make comments about, oh, well, that's just what a bunch of eggheads thought, or, you know, they're just academics, or, oh, they're just intellectuals, or they're just whatever. And what I think that the study we did reported out in Pain Medicine does is disallows that possibility. This is an issue that leaders, no matter where they are working, whether their focus really is at the local or the regional or the national level, there is agreement that there are these common problems, and agreement, I think, also, as Summer said, that this really, there is a moral imperative, as the IOM report claims, that we have to change this, that there's no longer really any excuse for not doing so. One of the things that is happening now too, Laurel, that I think is important to mention, is that because people have been engaged in this process, when we personally have a stake in something, we're much more likely to take action, to do something different. And as we are now thinking about the IOM report and the 16 recommendations that were made in that report, and how do we move beyond that towards change, the societal transformation that was called for, you know, frankly, we've got to have foot soldiers. We've got to have people who will really roll up their sleeves and go to work on this stuff. And we are seeing that those organizations and those individuals who were involved in our project are very willing to come together, work together, and to try to act on the recommendations that were made in both reports.
So, Summer, almost it played out where the IOM report in late June and now this report in Pain Medicine, this is almost in Pain Medicine where the IOM issues play themselves out at the grass level with the people who deal with it day to day. Would it be fair to say that?
I think so. And I think that, as Myra said, the fact that our paper reflects what the IOM report discussed in a significant regard is, again, a validation both of our research and also of what the IOM found. And I think that as this paper gets cited by other academics and is disseminated broadly to the public, that we will begin to see that this consensus is one that is real and is powerful, and hopefully one that also has an impact on the bioethics community as well. I mean, we were very deliberate in choosing to title this paper Defining Chronic Pain Ethics. I think this is an area where, in the field of bioethics, very few people have paid attention to this particular area, whether you want to call it health disparities or quality of care. And so I think one of the other goals is to help mobilize those working not just in the areas of pain medicine or academic medicine more generally, but also bioethicists, to say this is something we need to stand up and pay attention to and mobilize the way that we have around so many other bioethical issues in the last 30 years.
So, Myra, would it be fair to say then to you then that there is a consensus now around these issues around chronic pain? We have these studies that are in place, and now it's time to get to work.
I believe that's true. You know, Laurel, in the pain medicine report, we pointed to 75 to 150 million Americans living with these issues on a regular basis. And at that point, that was that's a very broad span of report. But the IOM report actually tacked it down at 116 million Americans. That's a huge number of people.
And the dollar figure was significant as well.
The dollar figure, again, kind of an estimate of medical cost and also loss of productivity. But between $580 billion and $630 billion a year. When we talk about cost, we can talk about economic cost, but we can also talk about humanistic cost. What does it mean in the lives of people? I'm going to talk about a comment on what Summer just said, though, about the bioethics community. This is the bioethics channel, and so I'd like to really speak to my colleagues in the field. You know, very often in bioethics, we have been excited about what I think of sometimes as the extreme, the experimental, the extraordinary, whether we're talking about conjoined twins or whether we're talking about nanotechnology or early stem cell research or whatever. You know, we really are attracted very often by the headlines. And Tom Murray at Hastings Center said to me one time, we're like a bunch of little kids playing soccer. It's like bunch ball. You know, we just all run to the newest and latest thing. And I think that's true. I think that's a fair criticism. We are far less likely to be interested in things like the ordinary, the common, things like nursing home issues or issues that primary care providers struggle with on a daily basis. And certainly we've not given much attention to pain. But, you know, when the Kansas City Star published their article about the IOM report, the front page headline above the fold, as we say, was "It Hurts." And so there is a headline, and I do hope that the work that the center has done in the last decade, I think there are a growing number of people. We're finding more colleagues, you know, Dr. Richard Payne at Duke or Daniel Goldberg, or there are an emerging group of people working in ethics who are expressing interest in these issues. I think that we've been rich in California. We have to really push on ourselves and our colleagues not to just seize the moment here, but continue to try to press this agenda.
The article is called Defining Chronic Pain Ethics. It's in the September 2011 issue of Pain Medicine. Two of the four authors are Myra Christopher, president and CEO of the Center for Practical Bioethics, and the holder of the Kathleen M. Foley Chair for Pain and Palliative Care at the Center. Summer McGee is Director of Graduate Studies at the Center and Associate Professor in Health Policy and Management at the University of Kansas Medical Center. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.